This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Janet Cowell has been North Carolina State Treasurer since 2008. As such, she oversees $80 billion in pension fund investments for public employees, the 25th largest fund of its kind in the world. That's, by the way, a number that keeps changing in everything I read, and chairs the North Carolina State Banking Commission. That's something she's done through some very challenging economic times, but she's been able to protect pension funds to the point where North Carolina's fund is second or third in the nation, while other states are struggling. Our state is also only one of nine in the country to be given a AAA bond rating by all three rating agencies, something Cowell can claim responsibility for and something which keeps borrowing costs low for taxpayers for things like schools, roads, and other infrastructure needs. Janet Cowell joined us several years ago on this program, and as we emerge from the Great Recession, she's back with us again to give us a kind of economic profile of the state today and where we may be headed in the future. Good morning. Welcome back to Charlotte, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Mike. Good to see you.
I mentioned that figure there. I said we are the 25th largest fund of its kind in the world. I also saw 32nd. I think I saw another number. I mentioned a minute ago that North Carolina's pension system ranked second or third in the nation, because I've seen two numbers on that.
Well, that's the challenge.
What
stocks go up and down.
Okay.
And so it does change daily. But I think the third is what I saw in terms of our rank of funding in the United States. So obviously very good, and a very large fund that a lot of people in North Carolina don't realize how big we are in the global financial scene.
So when we're ranked second or third, what does that mean? Is it the aggregate assets of the fund? Is it the strength of the fund? Is it the number of people enrolled in the fund? What does the number mean?
It's really the strength of the fund, and that we have the money put aside to meet our future funding obligations, and that the investment earnings on that fund have been good.
And why is it so big? North Carolina isn't the biggest state in the country. Why do we have one of the biggest funds in the country?
Because we have teachers, state employees, and local government employees, judicial. Everybody's in one big system, and that is a enormous blessing. Because when you look at states like, you know, Michigan, we've all heard about issues in Detroit and their pension fund. You have a lot of, in other states, a lot of small municipalities managing these little pots of money. And that is very challenging because these are complex. You know, investment world is a complex world. So in North Carolina, we had the foresight to just create one large centralized system. And that means you will not see, you know, problems like Detroit arising here in North Carolina, because everything is managed through our fund and it is all in very good shape.
But if North Carolina became Detroit, that means every municipality in North Carolina would be in big, big trouble. You're putting all your eggs in one basket. So tell me how you protect all those eggs in that big basket.
Well, my goal, you know, I was elected, as you noted, in 2008. And one of my goals is always to leave an office better than how I found it. Mm-hmm. We have put a lot of reforms in to check and balance the authority and put in, you know, ethics controls. So, for example, you know, gifts policies where people can't be taking gifts from people that might influence an investment decision. I have an investment advisory committee that we put into statute. And, for example, Neil Triplett, who's the chief investment officer of Duke's Endowment, sits on that committee so that I get advice from the top minds in finance here in North Carolina and from other states. So there's a number of things I've done to improve the office and make sure that we stay solid and, you know, that one big centralized system is good.
And you were in the financial sector prior to holding public office, correct? What did you do?
That's right. Privately? So when I graduated from college, I was a Chinese studies major. And I took the Trans-Siberian Railroad all the way over from Europe down to Hong Kong and became a securities analyst in what was at that time the burgeoning stock market world in Asia. You know, China was still pretty backwards at that time. There was no really Chinese stock market, but I worked on Southeast Asia, Indonesia, you know, Taiwan, Singapore, writing research reports on stocks. And I worked for Hong Kong Shanghai Bank and Lehman Brothers.
So according to a Morningstar report, in 2011 and 12, after 3 years of losses, the 5- and 10-year annualized rates of return for these pension funds and their 10 plans, right, are below the 7.25% discount rate used in the majority of plans. What does that mean for the plans and for those who will ultimately come to depend on them in retirement?
Well, as I said, the good news about North Carolina is not only are we very well funded, but we have a very, compared to other American funds, a low target rate of return. So we are shooting to make 7.25%. That's a pretty ambitious goal. I'd say a lot of people saving for their retirement. Well, of course, this year has been, you know, phenomenal in the stock market. But, you know, most people, you're probably shooting to make between 5% and 6% on your personal investments over 30 years. And so we're trying to shoot for 7.25. We've been around that over the last 10, 20 years, but it's a challenging investment goal, particularly when you look at interest rates being so close to zero and you've got any money in bonds. I think everybody knows that it's a hard return environment.
So where have you put the money?
So we have been slowly trying to diversify out of bonds, which has served us incredibly well in the state for 30 years. Mm-hmm. It really was a ballast during when the stock market was up and down and up and down. That bond portfolio kept us very solid. But now, because of the low interest rates, we are diversifying. So we're trying to put more money into real estate. We've done credit investments, private equity investments, as well as the stock market. But so just really trying to have a global and diversified portfolio.
The legislature, I don't know when they did this, but I think it's been during your tenure, I could be wrong, raised the vesting period for the retirement funds from 5 to 10 years. I assume they did that in order to make these plans stronger. You had to be an employee longer before you could take advantage of the pension plan. Is that a good idea in your opinion, or is that a bad idea, or was it necessary, something we needed to do?
To me, that has been made – the North Carolina pension, the worst aspects of it, it has made them worse. So it is a bad idea. And you take, for example, a teacher who starts teaching in North Carolina. We all know teachers aren't making a lot of money these days. My mother was a teacher, so I know how hard teachers work. And now not only do they have low pay, but they also have no retirement benefit at all for 10 years. Now you think about a young teacher coming in. You know, maybe they're coming from New York State and they're coming down here to teach and maybe they're going to go back up. They may never get any benefit. Mm-hmm. So on top of having low pay, they've got very poor benefits now. So we've tried to file bills, getting that back to 5 years. The impact on the actual pension health is pretty small. So I think it'd be a much better plan, you know, for the human resources of our state to get good teachers in our schools if we could change that.
Talk about what is meant by vesting. In other words, if you go to work for North Carolina and you would be covered by one of these pension plans at some point in your life, mm-hmm. you won't be covered until you've worked for 10 years. So what does that mean? Are you fully covered at 10 years or do you begin building up from 50% at 10 years?
The vesting means that's the time at which you really can start having any benefit, you know, in your retirement. So if you worked for 5 years for the state, quit, you know, and 30 years down the road, you hit 70 and you want to get your retirement, you'd get some small check from the state because you vested. And I think, you know, think about it with vacations. When people go to work, sometimes you have to work for a year before you qualify to get any vacation.
Why did the legislature do this if this is not a good idea in your mind?
I think there's a lot of confusion about retirement. It's been very politicized. And there was a sense that, we need to crack down on retirement benefits. They're too high. People take a national playbook and they try to apply it to North Carolina. And part of my role as treasurer has been to say, you know, we are incredibly solid. This is one of the best and most economic pension funds in the country. You don't apply solutions that you may need in other places in the United States to us. And if anything, because of our pay, you know, we need to fortify our teachers, not reduce their benefits right now.
Did this legislature do this, or is this a previous legislature?
This was back in 2011.
So it's the Republican-controlled legislature at that time?
Yes.
It's interesting because they generally don't like national benchmarks. They like to have their own control over things. And why do you suppose they're looking at national benchmarks for
something?
Well,
and I say that because another thing that I hear a lot is, we're like – this is a couple years ago, too. We're like Greece. We are drowning in debt. We've maxed out the credit card here in North Carolina, and we can't – and that is so false. North Carolina, as you noted, has a AAA bond rating. One of the reasons is that we are a hallmark of a very conservatively managed, low-debt financial state. We have lower debt per capita than almost any other state in the country. And so we've managed our debt capacity very well. And yet people hear these national stories or they think about the federal government and they try to slap that sort of generic solution onto us.
Because I've had a number of conversations on this program, both on and off the air, with people who say that the big elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about going forward into the future is that these pension funds and other entitlement programs are going to drown us, not just with the public at large, but with people who work for the state and local municipalities, because there simply aren't enough young people coming into work to fund these funds going forward into the future when we have massive numbers of people on retirement. You're saying that's not true. That's not so.
I'm saying here in North Carolina, we are still a high-growth state. We are surpassing Michigan, as you know, in population, and we're the only state in the country that grew every year during the past 10 years. So I say all that because we still have a lot of young people coming into the workforce, and we have, for every retiree, we have two active employees. So again, when people take some sort of generic national reference and try to apply it here, that's inappropriate.
Is it politics, or is it simply a lack of understanding about the realities of where North Carolina is in comparison to the rest of the country?
I think there's a little bit of both. I think sometimes it does take a while. Again, I served in the State General Assembly. I've been working in finance, you know, for years of my career. It takes time to understand all these numbers and what do they mean. And then I do think some of it is a political overlay of folks who don't really maybe want a public pension. I will just say, having been treasurer, I am so grateful. You know, both my parents, my dad's a Methodist minister and my mother was a school teacher, they have pensions. You know, and they were never super risk. My dad is so conservative. He wanted, you know, bonds. He was very afraid of financial risk. But, you know, they have some stability in their old age, very middle class. But I'm so grateful for that. And you realize that this next generation coming up who don't have those programs, they don't have matches from their employers, they're working at Burger King or they're working, you know, for Walmart or whatever, they're not going to have this kind of retirement. So that really worries me. And that's another area we've tried to do financial literacy for school children and adults, yeah, to try to get them to understand the need to save.
Which we will talk about, because I know that's one of your pet programs, yes, financial literacy education. As you said, you served in the state legislature. I believe you were on the city council in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, you were in the financial sector. Why – and now you've been – since 2008, you've been the state treasurer. Why the public sector? Why did you decide to gravitate toward that as opposed to the private sector, where if you're in the financial industry, you can make a lot more money than you're making right now?
Yeah, no, that is correct. And that's another misconception that, you know, that people are making big money in public service. No, I think, again, coming up from a tradition of public service, not elected public service, but dad being a minister, you know, the conversations we had around the dinner table growing up were about the issues of the community, you know, the kids in my mother's classroom, poverty and the needs of families that were coming into the church, you know, trying to better themselves. And so that public service gene really won out, even though I went to business school, mm-hmm, worked in the private sector, ultimately sort of trying to help have an impact for broad numbers of people drives me.
I have 30 seconds. Let's turn the question around. Since you come from that background, mom's a teacher, dad's a minister, why were you interested in money?
And the question for this, when I was a German exchange student in 1984, and when the wall fell, I watched all these people at Wharton, where I went to school, yeah, who had an influence on the whole restructuring of the East Bloc after the communists, and I saw the power of business, and I was very intrigued and wanted to understand that.
Janet Cowell is North Carolina State Treasurer. We're going to come back and talk about a myriad things here, including the recent announcement that was in the paper this morning about Amazon collecting sales tax for the state. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates, providing complete and comprehensive care for infants to seniors in eye, ENT, audiology, allergy, and sleep medicine for 90 years. Details at goodsenses.com. Well, for years, the theory has been that to ensure a child's self-esteem, they must get a trophy when participating in events. We have raised a generation, perhaps two, of trophy kids. And that's a problem, according to our guest tomorrow, because giving children undeserved praise, making them feel good about themselves for something they actually didn't do, is counterproductive. They end up giving up easier, not trying hard enough, taking fewer risks in life, and then when they do meet with failure, It devastates them. We talk to her, our guest tomorrow, about all of this and new thinking about children at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, cigarette smoking kills more than 400,000 Americans every year. A new report from the Surgeon General greatly expands the list of smoking-related health problems to include conditions like diabetes and vision loss.
Join the conversation on The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Janet Cowell is with us today. She's North Carolina State Treasurer, took office in 2008 and guided the state through a pretty tough financial time during this Great Recession, when you consider that she's responsible for the pension funds of a lot of people in this state, teachers, public employees, not only at the state level, but at some municipal levels as well. How did you do it? What were the challenges you faced as we watched the stock market fall and fall and fall and sit there for a good long time and jobs disappear, many of which have still not come back? How did you do it? How did you keep the pension fund healthy?
Well, I was saying my first press conference as state treasurer was to announce the $20 billion loss when the stock market plummeted, which is a great way to start a new job. What we've done since that time is, again, try to diversify. We saw that stocks were the most volatile asset. And so while you still have a large portion in stocks, we've tried to make sure that we have diversified to real estate and other things, as I mentioned. And we've also tried to put in better risk management systems to truly understand it's not just that you're holding, you know, a piece of real estate and a bond and a stock, but what are the underlying risk? Is it real interest rate risk? Is it, you know, all the different operating risks that you can have with financial companies? So lots of different controls, and I think we've got a very good team. We've tried to increase, you know, again, the checks and balances, get better advisors, et cetera.
You know, we've read in the newspaper stories about, like, I believe it was California's pension fund that was devastated by this recession. Why weren't we?
We had a much higher percentage in stocks, so that helped tremendously. And much higher percentage in bonds.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that really helped offset some of the losses that you saw in funds like California. The other thing is we always had a lot of liquidity, things that we could get money in and out. Some of these funds had their money locked up in long-term real estate investments and others, and then people started calling in the chips, and they just got stuck in investments.
Is that strategy one that the state treasurer and your predecessor, whoever that was that a decision they made at their level, this way to invest, what to invest in, or is that something that was advised by the advisory board you spoke of, or is it done by brokerage firms that perhaps you use to move things around?
The decision in North Carolina to have a very conservative investment portfolio, I would say, has been one that is decades in the making and continues today. Even now, when we talk about we want to diversify, get out of bonds, you know, at least reduce our exposure, the conversation we've had with the Investment Advisory Committee is, you know, this is North Carolina and we're always going to be conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't be the top performer, but we'll always protect more on the downside. And the good news is, again, we are very well funded. We don't have to be risking for huge amounts of risk, trying to make up for losses or, you know, pay. We are in a very position of strength. And so we can have these conversations and be more conservative.
You also administer the health benefit programs for teachers and public employees, the state health plan, essentially. What kind of health care benefits do teachers and state employees receive? And at what point do they get them? Do you have to be an employee for X number of months or years before you get benefits?
Now, anyone who signs up to work for the state automatically can enroll in the health plan. And we have 600,000 plus people in those plans. So, again, it's a very large plan. When I took over the plan 2 years ago, we went on a listening tour, and what we heard is people wanted more choices. So not just a one-size-fits-all plan, but some people wanted a plan that really rewarded wellness. You know, they were taking action about their health, trying to keep their families, out on the bicycle rides on weekend and eating well, and so they wanted credit for that. So what we've created in this new plan is there's a basic plan, which you don't have to do anything, but we've created a second plan where if you attest that you do not smoke tobacco if you have a primary care physician and you do a little wellness, 5-6 questions, you can get deductions off of all your premiums, you know, free visits to your primary care physician, et cetera. So those are some of the things we're trying to implement. So there are multiple choices within the plan.
You're on this plan?
I am on this plan.
The governor's on this plan?
Yep.
Is the legislature on this plan?
Yes. For those who choose, I mean, they may have some, you know, some of them working in private sector may have their
own plan. Does it cost anything to be on the plan if you're an employee of the state?
The main cost is if you have dependents. If you have children or a spouse, you pay for them, and then you also pay for out-of-pocket expenses, et cetera.
Out-of-pocket would be what?
When you go to the primary care physician and, you know, you may have to pay – last year it was $35. Under this new plan, when I go to my primary care physician, there will be no out-of-pocket expense.
So that's the copay?
Yes.
The copay. And is it a high deductible plan? How does it work in terms of that?
Well, what's interesting is one of the other plans is a consumer-driven health plan. That was another area where people said, you know, we'd like to have lower costs for dependents and things, and I'm willing to track my health care expenses. So we're going to have more of a consumer-driven where they get an account of, I think it's $1,500 in a health account.
Health savings account?
Yeah. Health reimbursement account, HRA instead of HSA. And they can track their expenses. That is actually one of the most beneficial. I'll tell you, some of the most savvy people on my state health plan signed up for that plan because they know they're going to save a bunch of money on that plan. That was a very small sign up that we had about 10,000 people who wanted to actually try out that more consumer-driven high deductible.
The reason I ask about all this is because of the Affordable Care Act. Because a lot of the public officials who voted for and against the Affordable Care Act, both here in North Carolina and on the national level, are covered by wonderful health care plans. They don't have to worry about their health care. It never even occurs to them. And most people in the country have been covered historically by their employer. And therefore there are really very few costs associated with healthcare, and I really don't think that they understand what healthcare costs for people who do not have access to insurance. Now, the Republicans in the legislature here decided not to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. The governor told us on this program that was because even though the federal government would fund the expansion for the first year, over the course of 3 years, they would gradually withdraw those funds, and then the state would become responsible for paying that Medicaid fund, and ultimately, the state would not be able to fund those expenses. Do you agree with that?
I will say that Medicaid and health care are two of the biggest ticket items in state government. And as treasurer, that's why I took on the state health plan, because it is such a huge financial thing. No matter what decision you make, if you decide you want to privatize Medicaid, that's twice as expensive as keeping the current system. If you decide you don't want to expand Medicaid, that's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. If you decide you do want to expand Medicaid, maybe you've got some expenses in the future. I mean, this is going to be expensive no matter what. So then I think the question becomes, how are you managing and budgeting, you know, on the current plan? And that is going to be a key. It's the key to the entire state budget coming into this year, is do you have a grip on what your Medicaid costs are, and do you have the appropriate staff to budget?
Isn't that what they were trying to do by rejecting the Medicaid expansion, to keep control of it?
I would say that, yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions around Medicaid. I guess my point being, it is a very expensive healthcare, period, is very expensive no matter what you do. And so sitting there thinking that there's a silver bullet if you don't expand, if you do expand, if you privatize, all of that, I think people just have to take a step back and say, what we really need to do is have expert budgeters who understand the federal-state interface and have a grip on those numbers. I think the thing that's most scary to me as treasurer is that no one knows what the numbers are right now. We're in January. We have to start a new state budget, and we don't know if there are hundreds of millions of dollars of expenses yet that could affect, would wash out any of the increasing revenue that we've seen in the state with the recovery, which is good. But Medicaid has such volatility and swing, and that nobody can name what those numbers are.
So let me understand this. Are you saying that, given the fact that you've already talked about North Carolina's conservative profile, this was a good decision, in your opinion?
No, I'm not saying that it's a good decision. I'm saying there are no silver bullets, And having made the decision, you have to know that that's a $600 or $700 million impact on the state. Mm-hmm. And that then you have to, the bigger issue to me, whatever decision you've made, is that you've got to have people who truly understand the federal budget, Medicaid budget, and have a grip on those numbers.
Do we have anybody who fits that description?
Right now, what we've been told is they do not have, you know, updated numbers on Medicaid.
The result of this is that there are a lot of people who are going to fall through this hole in the plan because they won't qualify for subsidies, and because we didn't expand Medicaid, there will be no money for them for their health care. So they will go uninsured, and I've forgotten the number, but it's a lot of people in North Carolina who will go uninsured. Now, when they get into trouble medically, if it's more than a sniffle, they're going to go to the emergency room in these hospitals, and they'll get coverage. And somebody has to pay for that. If they have an appendectomy or a heart attack or a brain seizure or an automobile accident, somebody is going to pay for that. Is it the hospitals, or will the state pick up the tab for that ultimately?
We all pay for that. And, you know, I'll tell you, I was up in Henderson County, and I talked to a woman who has AIDS. And mm-hmm. she has been in, you know, AIDS drugs for years. Very, you know, respectable, gracious older woman. Now she's got a lump in her breast. And she went to the doctor, but she's got no health coverage. And she did not – if they had expanded Medicaid, she would have had health coverage.
Right.
She does not – they're not going to give her surgery because she can't pay for it. So this woman's looking at, you know, potentially – fatal consequences.
They're not going to give her surgery because she can't pay for it? Isn't that against the law?
I mean, you can go to the medical room. Right. You can go to the ER and they can tell you you've got a lump in your breast, but they're not going to go give you surgery.
Really?
So, you know, you sit there and you face the consequences of, in this country, how many people don't have health care.
Okay. This morning, I learned about this yesterday because it actually came out yesterday, but it was in the paper this morning. Amazon, the online retailer, Amazon.com, says it will begin charging sales taxes on purchases made in North Carolina beginning February 1st. Amazon sued the North Carolina Department of Revenue in 2010 to block efforts to obtain names and addresses of North Carolina residents who bought items from the company. A federal judge ruled against the state, which eventually settled with Amazon. But now Amazon has said they're going to do it for the state, and they haven't said why. You obviously saw this coming. You must have seen this coming. Why have they decided to pick up the sales taxes and give them to you?
My sense is that they anticipate that this is simply the direction in which public policy is going. I said I was a state senator back in 05, 06, 07, and we talked about this then. And one of the big issues is fairness. You know, we have a lot of bricks and mortar shops, the little hardware stores, the bookstores that sell things here on the ground in cities like Charlotte, and they have to collect sales tax, and yet they're online competitors don't. And I think already 19.
But their online websites do, because if they have a bricks and mortar location in North Carolina, they have to collect the sales tax.
So I think 19 states, says Amazon is already, because they have some bricks and mortar presence, is collecting. So my sense is they're just going to get ahead of this eight ball and, you know, make sure that they're.
And in 2012, the state estimated that we lost as much as $214 million every year in uncollected online sales tax. Because theoretically, when you buy something from an online website, you're supposed to, you, the consumer, if they don't collect the tax on that end, you're supposed to send the state a check for that at tax time. Nobody does that. So $214 million, is that a lot of money to the state?
We have about a $20 billion budget, general fund. So
it's a drop in the bucket.
I mean, it's real money, but yeah.
It adds up over time.
Yeah.
As state treasurer, you're also a member of the State Board of Education. And one reason that North Carolina has been slow to recover from this recession, I'm told, is that many of its pre-recession jobs are never coming back. What role does education play in job creation?
Well, I think it's a huge role. It's a foundation, especially in North Carolina. The university system and the schools is why so many people have moved to the state. They've moved because of the high quality K through 12 schools and those universities. So it has been a huge business recruitment, and then also from an entrepreneurial perspective, a better educated population creates new jobs.
We've heard a lot of criticism from one side of the aisle about what's been going on at the state level with regard to funding education and how they treat teachers, and comments made by the governor about what the purpose of a college education is. As a member of the State Board of Education, talk about the state's current education policies? Are they hurting or helping our efforts to raise the profile of North Carolina for businesses who might want to locate here and to prepare citizens to work in a modern economy? Are they helping or hurting these policies?
Everybody knows that we have got to pay teachers a better salary. The folks that go into teaching, like my mother, they're not going in for big money. They're going in because they love children, they love being in the classroom, and the joy of seeing a child learn. That said, I've had people stand up to me, one young man who was a teacher, his wife's a teacher, and he said, we have one child, we want to have a second child, we can't afford to have a family and pay the health care bills as a teacher in this state. That is unacceptable for any state that wants to be globally economic competitive. So I do think that will be a big issue this year coming into the General Assembly on all sides of the aisle. Everybody knows we have to pay more.
The State Board of Education decided to increase the number of charter schools around North Carolina. And in reaction to that, you urged the board to, quote, stay mindful about the effects charter schools could have on traditional public schools. What do you believe that impact could be?
Well, of course, here in Mecklenburg, you've got a number of charters. There's other counties like Durham County that also, every time you open a charter, dollars flow out of the public school general fund and towards that follow the child to that charter. Mm-hmm. So you're losing money.
So in other words,
you get to a tipping point.
In Charlotte, Mecklenburg, when we open a charter school and kids start going to that charter school, Charlotte, Mecklenburg schools loses some money, mm-hmm. Equivalent to the amount that would be needed to,
right.
to educate that child in the charter school. So
right.
that you're saying that weakens the public school system?
Over time, you can get to a tipping point, and I'm not sure what exactly, at what point that is, where you've taken 50% of the budget out. It becomes much more difficult to plan. Let's say that you have a 5 to 10 year plan and you need two new high schools and 6 new elementary schools, and you start building those and you raise the money, and all of a sudden you've got 10 new charters that start draining students out of your – now you're left with stranded capital cost, and how do you pay for that? It creates more complexity, and so my request to the board and the state as treasurer is we need to collect as much financial data on these schools as we can – have a lot of discipline around, the charters, but be very aware of some of the risks to taxpayers and disruption to children's education from having these kind of dual systems.
Do you think the average citizen understands what we just talked about, that when you open a charter school, you're going to weaken the public schools because some of the money for those schools is now going to the charter schools? Do you think the legislators who made these decisions understand that?
I think most legislators understand that. I think some people in the general public do.
The general public might come back and say, well, who cares? The public schools are crappy.
Well, again, there could be consequences, though. What if you do – like Chapel Hill, for example, is going to build a big new school, and then you've got a huge charter school that could take up 30% of a population. Now you've got taxpayers with stranded costs.
Well, let's come back to this after the break, because I think we need a better answer to the question that I didn't really pose properly because we're running out of time about the public schools not being good. But we'll come back in a second. Janet Cowell is with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carolina Disc Associates, offering a non-surgical trademark method that helps the spinal discs heal and repair. Having a healthier disc can help avoid back surgery. Appointments at 704-541-5555. Cigarette smoking kills nearly 500,000 Americans every year. There's a new report from the Surgeon General greatly expanding the list of smoking-related health problems to include conditions like diabetes and vision loss, and they'll be talking about that in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have some questions or comments for our guest today, the State Treasurer of North Carolina, Janet Cowell. To get in touch, well, go to our website, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. That's a good kickoff point, and we are coming right back.
Every 2 seconds, someone needs blood. And to help meet those needs, WFAE is coordinating with the Community Blood Center of the Carolinas to host a blood drive at our studios in the university area on Wednesday, January 29th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. If you'd like to help, schedule an appointment. Visit WFAE.org and click on the events button at the top of our homepage to learn more.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. Our guest today is Janet Cowell. She is North Carolina, I think, 27th state treasurer, something in that number. All these numbers floating around today. But she's been state treasurer since 2008. You came in under a Democratic regime, and now you're serving under a Republican regime. But before we talk about education again, how has that changed what you do or how you have to do it?
The good news is that I've got wonderful working relationships with both sides of the aisle, and I have really managed my office in a way that is a nonpartisan professional office. Mm-hmm. You don't invest a dollar differently because you're Democrat or Republican. You know, you're investing for the benefit of the in all plans and health plans. So it has, I think we've been equally successful under both Democratic and Republican control.
Okay. Let's get back to education, because you're on the Board of Education, the State Board of Education. We were talking about charter schools siphoning off money from public schools, which could hurt ultimately the public schools, because you reach a tipping point where they have to educate and take everybody that comes through their doors. And I don't believe charter schools in all cases have to take everybody who comes through their doors, do they?
That's correct. They don't have to, and they also don't have to provide transportation. So you end up potentially stranding, you know, your lower income and less
right.
Privileged children into the traditional public
school. So you may reach a tipping point where the public schools are really hurting for money, because the money is going to charter schools, and they still have to provide transportation and school lunches, et cetera, for the children who must come there. And some parents would say, I don't care. The public schools are terrible. I'm putting my child where they're going to learn something and get an education so that they can succeed in life. Mm-hmm. Are the public schools bad? Because that is the overriding thing you hear about the public schools, except when people from Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, and I'm sure the same is true in Wake County and Raleigh, come back from these national conferences where CMS is thought of as being a leader in public education. And then you tell that to the people here in Charlotte, and they say, well, if we're a leader, we're in big trouble. So how are the public schools?
No, I think the public schools, you know, you look at the different metrics, and clearly we're doing well on a number of the different test standards and graduation rates. I think that was trumpeted, you know, recently.
You have all these kids who are graduating who can't read and write.
Yeah, no, we do have challenges. And look, I went to public schools, and I can
and
tell
look
you.
Look where it got you.
Yeah, before it got me. So there are challenges, and we have to continue to reform the public schools. And I think the best promise of some of the charters is to take really high-performing charters, like Raleigh Charter High School, for example, in Raleigh. Pamela Blizzard was the founder of that, and it's been a very successful high school. You know, what is it that has made that such a good learning environment for children, and how can you translate that into the broader experience of children?
And what is it that's made it so good?
I don't know what the answers
okay.
are for all
right.
of that, but I think tracking those lessons mm-hmm. very explicitly and then transferring and broaden, you know, and disseminating those into the public schools, that is the promise of charters. And I'm not sure that we have, as a state, been as conscientious and diligent in trying to learn the lessons from the best and then spreading those.
Have we learned the lessons from the many charter schools who have failed?
That is another challenge, is that if a school is not doing well, can you shut it down in an orderly fashion? And do that. I will tell you, from being on the school board, the amount of legal, you know, mm-hmm. lawsuits and proceedings and hearings, and it is not exactly an easy process.
You are, as I said earlier, an advocate of financial literacy. Define that. For whom? About what?
I guess in a most simple form, it would just be understanding money. Understanding in a society, capitalist society that we live in, how do you manage your money in order to, you know, live your life, to meet your goals, et cetera. And with children, mm-hmm. That's as simple as we have this story about Patches the piggy bank. And Patches, you know, it's about teaching kids to save and the concept of storing a little bit so that you can, you know, maybe go to buy that bike or buy the basketball. And for an adult, you know, obviously much more, you know, saving enough so you can retire and some basics on how you might want to invest.
Given the importance that money plays in our lives, Why do you suppose we have ignored this historically? No one even ever, I don't even recall my father teaching me how to balance a checkbook. I mean, seriously, we never talked about this in school, ever. Why? I mean, money, you can't live without money. And one of the reasons we got ourselves into this recession was that people didn't understand the economics of buying a home. And they got into loan products, which were foisted on them in some cases by people who were trying to make money for the banks or the mortgage companies that they really couldn't afford, but they didn't know that.
Yeah.
They didn't get it. So why don't we know these things?
No, it's interesting. I went on a tour and talked to a bunch of community college and college students, and 201, they really hadn't gotten, this is back, you know, 4 years ago, they hadn't learned nothing about this in school, and it ended up, it was the kids whose parents had set a good example. Mm-hmm. They learned most of all of this at home. They all said, we need to have this in our curriculum at school, and you need to do it in middle school before we start getting jobs and buying cars and opening a bank account and go to college. Some of these kids had even had bankruptcies in their early 20s. So the good news is we now have implemented, and I worked with June Atkinson to do this, financial literacy from five-year-old kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, and it's incorporated into the core curriculum as well as, of course, in the vocational ed and some of those courses where they've always been taught.
Unlike the federal government, the state cannot get into deficit spending because we can't print money like the federal government can. And despite the financial difficulties that we've been through, as you said earlier in the program, we've been able to maintain this AAA bond rating in the state of North Carolina, one of only seven states, I believe, to earn that rating from Standard & Poor's and Moody's and Fitch. What have we done to maintain that rating? How did we do it?
One of the biggest challenges that we've had, we've always had a very well-funded pension system, but the health care plan was not very well-funded. We had promised benefits and had not put aside the money to pay for them. So when I took over that system, we've actually reduced the what's called unfunded liability, and I know that is extremely dry technical jargon, but from about $34 billion down to $23 billion in just less than 2 years. So that affects the bond rating. They're looking to see both for pensions and health care, are these states truly funding their liabilities? And I think in North Carolina, we are making great progress on that health care and putting it in better financial shape. So I would speak to that. The other issue that's helped us keep our bond rating is the fact that we've kept our debt spending. Mm-hmm. We've been very disciplined about that. So that has remained a strength. The biggest challenge to our bond rating is going to be growth. I mentioned to you that, we are still one of the highest growing states in the country. We have a lot of young people and families moving here. How will we fund education? Back to education. How will we fund infrastructure to make sure that we can continue to grow?
Prior to the recession, we had a lot of conversations on this program about Charlotte and about the challenges facing our city and our region because of growth. And we kept hearing from politicians how growth is not only good, it is a necessity. And then comes the problems of funding growth, because for that growth, you've got to provide infrastructure in terms of sewers and roads and water, and you've got to provide education and schools. At some point, we couldn't even build schools fast enough here to handle the growth. Then the recession hit and all that stopped. We haven't heard about growth in a very long time. So tell me why growth is good from the state's point of view when, if we have this influx of population, we have to provide services for it that don't currently exist.
Somebody said, we don't tax and spend, we grow and spend. Because growth gives you the revenues where you can continue to invest, but it's a very fine balance, mm-hmm. right, to grow and provide the needed infrastructure, have the type of growth that then generates revenue. And I think we all know it's factories, it's new businesses, it's commerce that really provides the biggest boost and revenue growth. So that is our challenge. I think we've cut taxes a good bit, and I think the bet has been made that, if we cut our taxes, that will attract new businesses and that will increase growth and revenue.
What's your take on that? Do you think it will?
I think it's a big bet, and I guess my sense is education really has been – like I said, I'm from Tennessee. I came to the state because of education. I love education. I love learning. My family invested in education. I think you cannot depart from that investment in education if North Carolina wants to be successful. And so I think there you have to invest more than we are doing right now in both the universities and K-12.
And by investing in education, what are you talking about? Are you talking about paying teachers more? Are you talking about giving them retirement from day
just
one?
Just talking about professors. You know, the Connecticut University System, which I would say is, you know, one of the most renowned in the United States, just put up over $200 million to recruit the best research professors from all over the United States so they can become world class. I was told by one of the UNC trustees that while every professor that's recruited away, we used to retain 70% of them. We now only retain 30. Wow. So we are losing some of the best and brightest minds.
And we're losing them because?
Because we are not funding our universities. We're not funding the salaries to pay these professors. And we're not funding the research. And we're not – just like we're not funding the teachers. And I will just say, you know, you can do that for some short period of time. But the longer this goes on, the more you fundamentally erode, you know, the excellent R&D. I was just last week at NC State where Obama – President Obama came down to announce the manufacturing research facility there at NC State. Those are the kinds of investments – you know, that we need to make at a state level, at a federal level. I mean, that was good news for NC State and for North Carolina. We've just got to do more of that.
And we cut because we couldn't afford it, they said. Can we afford it? What is the financial condition of the state of North Carolina at this moment in time?
The good news with North Carolina is the foundation is excellent. Again, we've got solid finances, AAA, well-funded pension, getting the health plan in shape. We've got to figure out how we're going to fund growth. I think that, you know.
How did we fund it prior to the recession? Did we think about it or did we need to think about it? Did we just let it go haphazardly? And what did we do?
Well, we used the additional revenues and the current taxes as, you know, part of it was growth. I think right now we've made a decision to cut taxes and revenue instead of maybe funding education, and we'll see how that bet turns out.
Well, you several years ago said that if the state doesn't fundamentally reform the tax code, then in the upcoming, upcoming legislative session, then it will have been a failure, that session. Well, we never have fundamentally reformed the tax code. I believe the closest that we've come is a change in how in the structure of income taxes, who pays what and why and how. Is that a step in the right direction, depending more on sales tax and cutting personal income taxes for people in certain levels? Is that the right way to go?
You know, we all want to broaden. We have a very narrow tax base, and we need to broaden that, and then we could lower it. I think what we did was more of a – I would define it more as just a tax cut than a fundamental tax reform. I think there was some beginnings of reform. But we'll see. I mean, I just noticed on my vehicle insurance in Wake County that my tax doubled. So I think there's a pretty big hit on some middle-class folks. Also, the college savings deduction, again, as someone who believes in education and has account, I have, you know, a godson I'm helping save for college. The fact that we're not getting tax credits for those savings to me is, you know, that's not a choice I would have made.
So how would you structure if you were going to revise the tax code? What would you have done? I know this is a big question that you can't answer on a radio show, but
well, no, I mean I presented a plan, and really my plan was just there have been so many commissions on this, as you know, you know, over seven years, and all of them said the same thing, which is what I, you know, you need to get rid of some of these exemptions that aren't working and loopholes
like.
There's just a number of business. What we haven't done in the state is do a comprehensive review of all of the tax credits and exemptions and decide which ones are actually getting us results and which ones aren't. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of fact in these conversations. They seem to be very kind of emotional. So I would suggest that review. And then you would broaden the sales tax to cover, you know, more services and lower the rates. The idea is you have a fairer tax code, a simpler tax code, and a less volatile set of revenues.
So, for instance, there are certain things that are being taxed now as of January 1st, sales taxed, that were not taxed prior to January 1st. One of them, Movie tickets. Right? But we did not lower, as I understand it, the sales tax. I mean, the sales tax is what? Still 7.25% from the state and whatever the counties put on top of it. What is the tax on movie tickets and how much revenue will that generate?
I do not know the specific numbers
okay.
on those.
Okay. But there are other services, like are maid services being taxed? Are lawn services being taxed?
Yeah, I think in North Carolina we tax like 35 services versus, say, Tennessee, it was taxing 50-something. Hmm. You know, so I think they picked up a few. Mm-hmm. But it was not a broad.
Why does tax reform seem to be so difficult? Is it because if you make a mistake, the consequences could be really dramatic? Or is it because of politics?
Yeah, politics. You know, who's going to win? Who's going to lose? Everybody gets up on their hind legs.
Right.
I've heard at the federal level, it's dead this year.
Uh-huh.
So I think what was a good intention. Mm-hmm. And then folks wade into the weeds, and it just kind of falls apart because of all the political pressures.
In the time that you've been state treasurer, only have like 20 seconds, what's been your most rewarding moment or accomplishment in your head?
Now, I think the most rewarding has been having the state health plan come over, creating a new board of state employees, teachers, and experts, doctors, and really seeing more choice. I mean, some of the bumps in the rollout, notwithstanding, I think we are really, moving in the right direction.
Janet Cowell has been our state treasurer since 2008. Thanks very much for the hour. I appreciate it.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of Not Even